This is World Lutheran News Digest, an audio news magazine bringing you a look at significant events in worldwide Lutheranism. WLN Digest is produced through the facilities of Worldwide KFUO, a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
I'm Buzz Ulrich.
And I'm Andy Bates.
Today on World Lutheran News Digest...
More recently, the Rockroar family has moved to Ethiopia, where Carl now has a new position. He is busy ensuring theologians at the Makana Yesu Seminary in Addis Ababa are given the proper education.
What are DCEs, and how do they serve in the church today?
Novosibirsk. It is a city in Siberia with a Lutheran church presence in the 21st century.
And now today's Fast Track.
The Lutheran Malaria Initiative has met a $125,000 challenge grant offered by Angel Tear Ministries, a program of Concordia Lutheran Ministries of Cabot, Pennsylvania, USA. The funds will be used by Lutheran Malaria Initiative to work in African nations to combat malaria, where annually more than 700,000 men, women, and children die from this preventable and treatable disease. Reverend Thomas Christ is a called missionary for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod in Singapore. Over the past several months, he has reported some significant progress and a few delays in implementing his ministry in Singapore. One of the delays included a technical slowdown that has, for now, put the permanent opening of the ministry office on a temporary hold. However, Pastor Christ also reports that he will be deployed for a two-month stay from mid-October to mid-December as he prepares to make the move permanent in 2014. While summer is ending in the Northern Hemisphere, the Southern Hemisphere is ramping up toward the warm weather months. In New Zealand, Bishop Mark Whitfield reports he is making a trip through the various cities where the Lutheran Church New Zealand congregations are located, listening to the parishioners and praying with them for the strengthening of the church. Also being reported down under is the bishops and representatives from the Lutheran Church of Australia's New South Wales district who have issued a statement through the National Council of Churches in Australia condemning attacks on Christians and Christian organizations in the Middle East, condemning, quote, "these actions which stand against the basic notions of freedom of religion, morals, and human rights," end quote. "Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord, the people he has chosen as his heritage," Psalm 33:12. That's the basis for the meditation of the Independent Evangelical Lutheran Church in Brazil during this week's celebration of the Brazilian Fatherland. Pastor Geraldo Waldmir Schuller notes that Brazil is a country of contrasts with great wealth and at the same time great poverty. He urged Lutherans and all Christians in Brazil to witness and make known this God who, in his Son, Jesus Christ, is shown loving and merciful to all people of all nations. Pastor Schuller says that Brazil is a wonderful country and that witnessing will manifest itself in the quality of life in the nation.
This is World Lutheran News Digest. ഇത് ലോക ലൂത്രൻ വാർത്താ പരിപാടിയാകുന്നു.
Teaching the gospel of Jesus Christ to 6 million Lutherans in a growing church body is a never-ending task. In this segment, we will start exploring a man who takes his teaching seriously. So seriously, in fact, that he has lived far away from his homeland for many years to help train others to become God's teachers, God's preachers, Lutheran pastors who can properly share the good news of Christ to the world. Dr. Carl Rockroar and his wife Deborah grew up, met, and married in the middle of the United States of America. Both had Lutheran roots and completed their education at Concordia Seminary St. Louis before Carl took his first call as a pastor. Both served in missionary work in Ghana in the 1990s and again from 2011 until 2013 in South Africa. More recently, the Rockroar family has moved to Ethiopia, where Carl now has a new position. He is busy ensuring theologians at the Makana Yesu Seminary in Addis Ababa are given the proper education. Rockroar is charged with training those who will shepherd as pastors over 6 million Lutherans in Ethiopia.
It's Makana Yesu Seminary of the Ethiopian Evangelical Church Makana Yesus. And Makana Yesus means in Amharic, it means place of Jesus. What our work, or my work, involves as the dean of the School of Theology. At the seminary, there's three schools. There's the School of Theology, School of Jazz, and the School of Leadership and Management. So in the School of Theology, then, there was actually a restructuring of Makanah Yesu Seminary that's being implemented now, so that we have about somewhere between 300 and 400 residential students, about 320. And then we also have, there also is based out of Makanah Yesu Seminary since actually 1970, Theological Education by Extension Program. There they have a number of sites throughout Ethiopia in which they're training cohorts or classes of folks to be pastors. That is based out of Makanah Yesu Seminary. That's about 1,500 students in that. Then they also just started a College of Distance Education, which is basically the idea is they can get their bachelor's degree at a distance. And there's about 1,000 students in that. And what they've done now is the restructuring. They've actually put TEE and the distance education and the graduate school, along with the BTH, the undergraduate school, all under the dean. And it's a big shift. But if you talk to the church leaders like Dr. Berhanu, they want it more gathered together or unified, I might say. It's a big task. And right before I left, they announced that the restructuring was going to be put into place. And then they also, we have another new position, which I'm so thankful for, an associate dean. And it's somebody's in that temporarily now, and there'll be a more permanent person. But the hope or the plan right now for me, from my perspective at least, is that associate dean will really watch over the day-to-day things of the undergraduate school. And I would like to spend more time focusing on building up the graduate school. It's just kind of brand new, only 2 years old.
Carl Rockroar notes that the Makanah Yesu Lutheran Church in Ethiopia and ties with the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod are relatively new. And one of the best parts of the relationship is ensuring the pastoral care that starts in the seminary, teaching the proper theological distinctions. Historically, the Ethiopian Lutheran body had relations with more liberal church bodies. As a result of the switch in alliance, largely due to the other church bodies opening up marriage to same-sex couples, the Makanah Yesu pastors are now being trained in a more traditional, confessional Lutheran manner. Dr. Rockroar points out that the Makanah Yesu in Ethiopia made contact with the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and officials with the LCMS seeking theological training.
For Dr. Berhanu, and as chairman of the board, seminary board, and for the other directors of the seminary board, to say, LCMS, would you give us somebody who will be the dean of the School of Theology? That's open. I mean, that's help guide our curriculum, help lay it out, help bring the graduate program up to, you know. And one of the exciting things, whether Lord willing we can accomplish this at Makanah Yesu, is, to my knowledge, there's not an accredited Lutheran seminary in Africa at the doctoral level.
So there are numerous goals that Dean Rockroar has been setting in order to set the curriculum and teaching staff necessary at the Makanah Yesu Seminary in Addis Ababa. World Lutheran News Digest will keep in touch with Dr. Rockroar and the Makanah Yesu Seminary and Church to see how Lutheranism continues to blossom in Ethiopia.
Usted está escuchando el resumen de noticias Mundo Luterano. This is World Lutheran News Digest.
The board members of the National Association of Directors of Christian Education recently held their annual meeting in St. Louis, Missouri. We had the opportunity to meet with the leaders of NADCE to discuss the history and service of DCEs in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Dr. Mark Blanke, DCE Program Director at Concordia University, Nebraska, gives a brief history of DCEs in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
In 1959, our synod approved the startup of DCE ministry, and it was to help to promote and carry out effective parish-based Christian education. So in 59, they started they approved it, and then two schools, Concordia Concordia Teachers College in Seward, Nebraska, and Concordia in River Forest, were assigned the process of starting programs. Since that time, There are now six schools that have programs. Concordia, Nebraska still does. Concordia, Chicago. Concordia in Texas. Concordia, St. Paul. Concordia, Portland. And Concordia in Irvine all have DCE training programs. And since 1959, there are now over 600 DCEs serving congregations in our synod. And the ministry has changed and morphed a little bit over the years, but it really stays focused on how to best facilitate, lead, and implement an effective Christian education program in congregations. And so DCEs do many different things. There are some that serve in other capacities, but the main thrust of our efforts is to focus on Christian education in the church.
The work of DCEs can vary from congregation to congregation. DCE Vanessa Seifert defines the typical director of Christian education.
Typical, that's a loaded word. I know back in the 90s, there was some research that was done on percentage breakdowns of how DCEs spend their time. Unfortunately, I don't have those stats at my disposal, but I do know at that time, by and large, the largest percentage was spent in the area of youth ministry. But as one looks at the definition of a DCE, which is a called and commissioned lifespan religious educator prepared for team ministry in a congregation setting, one can look at the word lifespan and realize that the breadth and depth of DCE ministry is large. And so there are DCEs serving in adult education specifically, children's ministry specifically, more generalist calls overseeing intentional faith formation from cradle to grave.
Some think that DCEs work only with youth. DCE Jeremy Becker dispels this myth.
A lot of people think it's just youth ministry, and I think that's obviously incorrect. It does include a lot of youth ministry efforts, but I know in now my second call, I get to work with youth and families. And so the family ministry aspect is a big component of DCE ministry as well. How do we not just train and educate children and youth, but their parents, those that we believe are called to share and live and pass on the faith to their children? So that's another big component of DCE ministry.
Directors of Christian education prepare for their service to the church with studies in theology and education. What role does education theory play in the work of DCEs?
DCEs are continuing to explore different facets of theories to implement in the congregation. And what we know hands down is that the Holy Spirit is the one who does the transforming work. The Holy Spirit is the one who shapes and forms and transforms. And as DCEs, we have a unique opportunity to help create environments for the Holy Spirit to do his thing. And educational theories and approaches are a way, a tool that we can use in the process. And the cognitive education is only a piece of that. And DCEs right now are really exploring other facets of education that involve the affective, that involve that worldview change in terms of truly seeing ourselves as living into our baptismal identity and seeing all of faith as life and all of life as faith, which is another really, really beautiful thing, I think.
What steps should a congregation take if they would like to find out more about the potential of a DCE serving in their congregation?
And so congregations, obviously, that look at their needs, look at staffing issues, and say, we are really deficient in someone to lead and facilitate worship, to visit the sick, to administer pastoral care, then they would look at a pastor. It's designed that way. If they're saying, boy, we really need some more pastoral support, but from a feminine perspective, and we would benefit from somebody who could lend that, deaconess might fit. But if congregations look at their congregational needs and they say, what we're really looking at is somebody to enhance our educational efforts, that's DCE ministry. If it's in the congregation, if it's in a school, then they would look to Lutheran teachers. And so the first thing is the congregational step to make a determination about what is it that we want to do. But then the next step is they can contact any of those schools that I mentioned that are doing DCE-related ministry or preparing DCEs, they can contact their district offices and say, we're wanting some names of available DCE candidates. They could even talk to their district and find out if there are DCEs who are in their district already who could come and talk to their congregations about DCE ministry. What is it? How does it work? You know, what are the nuances associated with it? They have the opportunity. They could contact any of the schools if they're interested in getting a DCE that prepare DCEs, and they could get an intern. All DCEs have to complete a one-year-long internship. It's paid by the congregation, but it's a way to perhaps try out DCE ministry. They could get a candidate. That's somebody from the synodical schools who have finished their internship and now are eligible for a call. Or they could get somebody from the field that is already has experience as a DCE. And for those individuals, they would contact their district offices to get the names.
One last final thought. Anybody can visit our website, which is www.nadce.org. Click on the send email, and anybody on the board would be happy to share insights, experiences, answer any questions.
This is World Lutheran News Digest. The work by the way long as a Lutheran Firehound.
Novosibirsk. It is a city in Siberia with a Lutheran church presence in the 21st century. In fact, in the history of Lutheranism, the city of Moscow actually had a Lutheran church all the way back in 1576. Lutherans were the second most common Christian denomination after the Orthodox Church all the way until 1917. Some were martyred, and throughout the decades of communism, Lutherans lived with persecution hanging over their heads. In the 1940s, many Lutherans were exiled to Siberia and Kazakhstan. Then, the fall of communism occurred in the latter part of the 20th century, and there was a realization that Lutheranism had not died, but had been continued by many citizens who had been catechized. A group of pastors had begun to speak out by the 1990s in joyful hope that Lutheran church bodies would aid in the spread of Christianity throughout the former Soviet Union. Russian pastors were given the opportunity to visit the United States and meet with other Lutherans, forming a bond with high-ranking members of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and discussing ways of teaching Lutheranism in Siberia. The Siberian seminary rector put out a call for a mission teacher. That's when Pastor Alan Ludwig and his wife were asked to be part of the evangelical mission work to Novosibirsk in the 20th century. Ludwig not only taught for 10 weeks, but also learned about Siberia.
Russia traditionally was a fairly small European territory in what is now the larger country of Russia. In the 17th century, they expanded eastward, just as in America we expanded westward. And the area beyond the Ural Mountains, which is the dividing point between Europe and Asia, is the area known as Siberia.
And while the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod had been working to help Lutherans in Siberia, Russia, and other former Soviet bloc states and countries, Reverend Ludwig says a journey to Novosibirsk was not in his initial life plan.
I ended up in Novosibirsk through not through my own reason or strength, not through my own choice. It was just one of those things that kind of happened. I sometimes say in this case it was not what I know, but whom I know. And I was acquainted with Dr. Timothy Quill, the head of the Russian project at the Fort Wayne Seminary. And he gave me a phone call and asked if I could come to some cities whose name I couldn't pronounce in Siberia to teach for 10 weeks. I was a happy parish pastor at the time, and I gave him a flat refusal. No, I cannot leave my flock for 10 weeks. He finally convinced me, and he said, I will convince your elders. He did that. So on January 1st, 1998, my wife Patricia and I got on a plane and began what for us was really quite a 10-week adventure. We thought that would probably be an era in our life that we could fondly look back on, and but just a very small thing. But one thing led to another, and I ended up being there for 3 to 5 years, and that was nearly 15 years ago.
traveling to Siberia was a bit of a challenge in 1998, but Pastor Ludwig says things can change over the course of a decade and a half.
When I got there, I would say that there was very, very little technology. You could still really sense strongly the Soviet-era feel to things. I remember the Moscow airport. It was anything but user-friendly, whereas today it's really one of the most advanced progressive airports in the world.
Ludwig says when he and his wife first arrived at the airport in Moscow, there was no place to sit and they had no idea where to go. But as far as technology, it's been a rapid change in Russia and Siberia.
It was very difficult to find someone who could tell us. They kind of treated us like, well, like the enemy. In stores, when you went to a store, when you made a purchase, more often than not, the price was computed on an abacus, one of those things with wireframes with beads. Then just a couple of years later, people began to get electronic calculators, and if they were really progressive, the electronic calculator was on the front, the abacus was sitting on the back shelf, but often it was the other way around. And all of that eventually was replaced by electronic cash registers. Now, I would say everywhere you go in urban Russia, the technology is as advanced or in some cases more advanced than you will find just about anywhere in the world. It's just been a technological revolution. Very few people had telephones. Now everyone has a cell phone. Most people have skipped the landline stage entirely.
What can be said about technology is also happening in the Siberian Evangelical Lutheran Church. Things are progressing. When he arrived in Novosibirsk 15 years ago, Pastor Alan Ludwig found the beginnings of a seminary, but also a church that was not stagnant.
When I arrived there, I was pretty much on the ground floor of the seminary. The church already existed, and there were already, well, beginning mission stations or parishes in a few other places. But since then, the number of parishes has grown. I'm not sure of the exact number, but I think of mission stations, preaching stations we have, and congregations we have something like 22. When I got there, maybe five or six. The seminary, as I said, was just beginning, and that's the main reason I came.
Ludwig says those who make up the Lutheran Church in Siberia and Russia are interested in learning the gospel message. Although most of the citizens grew up in a repressed communist state, Lutherans in the region have a good grasp of history.
I would stress that Russians by nature are very conservative and traditional people. You might not expect that, whereas they come from this seemingly progressive communist background. But that did not change the character or the nature of the Russian people. They love the liturgy. They love traditional theology and traditional worship. They love the sacraments. They are very much a confessional, sacramental Lutheran church.
This is the context in which the Siberian Evangelical Lutheran Church has grown, as well as in which Pastor Ludwig has become a key part of the scenery. He notes that the work done over the past couple of decades has been an effort by many.
One person can't take credit for this. It's just kind of a movement of the Lord. A Lutheran church that sprang up in Siberia, literally out of nowhere, and it's probably the first and maybe only still ethnically Russian Lutheran church on the territory of Russia. It just kind of happened when one man, who is now Bishop Litkin, read anti-Christian Soviet propaganda and was more convinced by the Bible than he was by the propaganda. He went to Estonia, where there was a Lutheran church, was baptized, confirmed, and when the Soviet Union came to an end, he began to gather groups of students from the university. They had Bible study discussion. In time, he was ordained by the Estonian Lutheran Church. He was the sole pastor for a long time, but there were others who were ordained as deacons. In that church, they have ordained deacons. Some of these went off to other places. So it was a combination of his work and the work of others. And to some extent, the American Lutherans that they ran into in the mid-90s who helped them with their theological direction and provided the one thing that they asked for help in, and that is theological education for their clergy.
Throughout the time that Ludwig has been a professor at Lutheran Theological Seminary in Novosibirsk, he has maintained not only the confessional Lutheran teachings, but shared with the Western world the news from Siberia. The bishop of the Siberian Church, Vsevolod Litkin, spent part of July 2013 in the United States.
Our church is in relations with Missouri Synod for many years, and such relations are big treasure for us because we obtain a lot of support from Missouri Synod, and especially I'm talking about supporting theological education, because it was of first importance when our churches in Siberia began to exist as independent church body. It was of first importance to create our own educational system, our seminary, and of course we cannot do it by ourselves, and because of the great support from the seminaries in Missouri Synod, especially support from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, we have our seminary in Novosibirsk. So it shows that our relations are very close.
More recently, Bishop Litkin spoke at the 65th Regular Convention of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. A relationship which began more than 17 years ago was solidified in 2013 as the LCMS ratified altar and pulpit fellowship with the Siberian Evangelical Lutheran Church. For those who want to find out more about Pastor Alan Ludwig and his missionary work involving the Siberian Evangelical Lutheran Church, you can see the links at this story on the WLN Digest page at Worldwide KFUO.
World Lutheran News Digest is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. WLN Digest is produced through the facilities of Worldwide KFUO. You can also listen to WLN Digest on demand at KFUO.org. To correspond with World Lutheran News Digest, email news@KFUO.org.